yesterday, hopefully.
There's that one person that said that. Okay, you act what you believe yourself to be, and this is the key. You got a present domination of how you think yourself, the way you are, you're going to have a tendency to behave that way. It's just fact. We also look at little things, something that's of value to you, you let it through, you can start seeing ways. You go downtown to buy a pair of new shoes, you come home, everybody's got those shoes. It's of value to it, now you see it. We talked a little bit about truth. The truth you believe about yourself isn't necessarily the whole truth. The limitations you put on yourself may be limiting you from potential. So we looked at that a little bit. So, picking up with that, some of the things we're talking about. If you think yourself as I'll never be good enough or I'm too sinful, all I do is evil things, then this is your belief and your mind will accommodate you. And when you do something wrong, you tell yourself, see, that's just like me to do things like that. That's the way I am. That's the way I believe myself to be. That's the way I behave. Let's start out with a few verses. Where did I leave off yesterday? I won't start saying you. Go for it. Let's go. Okay. Tracy, would you please look up Matthew 15:19? And then Steve, Matthew 15:20. And then Megan, Mark 7:21. And the guy right next to her, what's your name?
Seth.
Seth, I'm sorry. Seth, I'm Tom. Would you get Mark 7:22?
Mr. Jolly.
And the man next to you, you are?
No.
Okay, you got Mark 7:23.
Can you have them announced before the reading?
Oh, okay. What we're going back to? Okay.
It's kind of hard to write down.
Tracy can go ahead with Matthew 15:19.
Prayer of the heart deceives evil thoughts, murderers, adulterers, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies.
Okay, Steve-O.
The other thing is defile the man. But he that unlocked him does not defile the man.
Okay, these are the things which defile a man. Now let's go. This is a classic verse if you're trying to refute somebody by believing in the devil. Mark 7:21.
The from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adultery, fornication, murder.
Seth 22.
Death, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness.
Okay, Mark 7:23.
And these evil things come from within, bound.
Okay, everything starts with the heart, whether you can do something bad, or whether you can do something good. We know that, we talked about yesterday in Jeremiah, the heart's deceitful above all things. If you just leave it to your heart, you're going to do bad things, period. It's simple. We're led to draw that way. That's our flesh. That's our heart. We'll do it that way. We don't have the devil to blame things on. What a bummer. We're responsible. That's tough. That makes us responsible for actions. That means we got to think about what our actions are. Our minds naturally direct most of our attention to the things we're not supposed to do. You find yourself doing that, making checklists. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. What am I supposed to do? We dwell a lot naturally on the negative, what not to do. We need to redirect our thinking and focus on what we can do. Expand the mind to things you're not doing now, but what you can do. We know that we can do things that are right. Well, all of these actions, evil works, we just read, they begin with the mind, your heart. Jesus wasn't tempted from some devil that just came into him and said, do all these things. He was thinking about things. He had these powers. He's being tempted to see if he was going to use these powers. When we dwell on these thoughts, these evil thoughts of the natural heart that goes into us, well, and we feed these desires, well, naturally, without God, we're going to perform them. This is a simple concept I want you to remember. Garbage in, garbage out. You put bad things in your mind, you dwell on bad things, what are you going to get out? It doesn't make any sense if you're doing anything positive out of it, are you? You put in bad sanctions of other people, you're a loser. Yeah, I'm a loser. That's garbage. Maybe you're going to act like a loser. It's just our natural tendency. You dwell on bad things like foul language, etc. like that. You think about That's a really good foul word. Well, you dwell on these things, it's eventually going to come out of the situation. Garbage in, garbage out. Remember that principle, guys? You know, I've known people that have just sat around thinking, what's the worst thing I can say? Yeah, that's a good one. And it's terrible. And they got a terrible mouth.
You too.
Without a constant reinforcement of God's teachings and support, we've got no other influences to tell us that we can perform differently. If you've got the world as your barometer, how are you going to start acting? What's a real moral thing in the world that they tell you to do today? What's a moral standard that everybody still holds to be true? Can you think of any? Yeah, I mean, is there a real moral thing to keep the family together? Or is it, you know, kind of do whatever you want? Divorce? Oh, I'm a homosexual and let's adopt. That's great, isn't it? What does that mean? You know? And you can see how we're starting to get numb to these ideas. You hear it so much, abortion, homosexuality, over and over and over. What are your opinions on it now? You kind of just go, just keep them to themselves. See, you can get numb. It's called situational ethics. People invent morals for the situation and then call it morals. You know, I answered the question before, what's morally right that the world supports today? Just give me one thing. Okay. It's still a little bit taboo, isn't it? I bet you it's coming. I'm a grown adult. My sister's a grown adult, and we can make our own choices. And you shouldn't meddle with our affairs. I've got rights. She's got rights. You see where that's coming? Someone could support that. You betcha. Two grown adults, consenting adults, we're going to do what we want. That's my constitutional right. You can't tell me I can't sleep with my sister. Someone could support that. It's a joke. The world's a joke. You don't got family. You don't got the same or opposite sex like it was created. You don't have anything. There's not one thing, really, that's moral. It's amazing. Because we are inherently evil. And we're not good. You know, the humanists say, and I'll get this to us later, we're created good. What a joke. Thus, we believe we're only able to commit sin and we're incapable of doing right. Our belief delegates our behavior. Period. Your belief delegates how you're going to act. So it's vital that we reinforce God's desire to have us in the kingdom. Fear not, little flock. It's your Father's good pleasure to have you there. So it's vital that we reinforce this. He gave His only Son. That's reinforcement, isn't it? You can read about that. That we establish a confident faith, a can-do faith. The world is a can't-do faith. Well, some of our reinforcements are reading others. That's a big reinforcement these days. If you can bond with somebody else, you know, there's some things you can't tell your parents, but if you can call up a friend and say, man, I'm struggling with this. How are you dealing with it? That's not as threatening, you know. Parents, you know, we see adults as like, they have no idea they were going through school in the 1800s, you know. They're still wearing dresses down to the ground. You know, they don't have the temptations, I know. But you can bond with a friend. Look at all these young people you got. This is pretty good. You know, back in the years, things were scarce. But it's good to see a good crowd like this. You can bond with one another. You can strengthen one another. You can explain and relate to the same things. You know, it's not someone saying, don't do this, and you're going, you don't got a clue what it's like today. You don't know what high school or junior high like is like in 1993. And it's getting worse, you know. Things that I went through in college, these younger guys, you guys are going through, are exposed to in junior high. You know, just, you know, corruption's just back and back and back, and now you get into elementary school. All this stuff. You know, the world's depressing, so let's get off of that. This is a positive class. Religion is simply to realign oneself with God's ways rather than our own ways. Religion, realign. Get set in a new direction. Well, for us humans, this is quite a shock to the system. You read about Paul in Romans 7. You know, I know what I'm supposed to do, but I don't do it. I want to do the things right, but with my flesh, I serve the law of man. It's a struggle. It's a fight. To truly behave as God, we must change or realign a way of thinking to change our actions and our behavior. This is what we're trying to get at all week. Change your thinking so you can change your behavior. When we sin, we need to tell ourselves, that's not like me. I can control my temper. Instead of dwelling on our current self-image and saying, yep, there I go again. Got angry again, lost my mind. That's me. That's the way I am. Can't change. The Bible, the whole thing's about change. And I'll sound like Bill Clinton here for a minute. People want change. It's about change. Well, it is about change. If you stay in your little comfort zones and your little areas, you'll never go outside those and experience higher levels of performance. It takes a little stress to change. Now, a lot of people, here's a good example. If you think you're terrible at math, you do good on a test, oh, I was lucky that time. That test was easy. I'm normally bad at math. You'll rationalize, slide back into your rut. I'm bad at math. It was an easy test. Or you make the three-pointer from half court, win the game. Let's do it. You make the layup in the last couple seconds. Whew, I was lucky. That was awesome. I can't do that again, though. It's just like, I was in the zone. See? But if you stretch your performance levels, then this stress, you can move through it and then start performing at this level. If your goal is high enough, you'll move towards it. Like we were trying to create how to put in a swim pool out here, you started to think, okay, we're going to raise money, we're going to put some people to work. When you set the goal, you start to see how to make it come reality. You can't do it the opposite way. You got to have the goal. Well, one of the most important aspects of a goal is that it's attainable. How many people think the kingdom of here is too lofty for you? Just something that I can't be that righteous. No way. Anybody feel that way? Or have felt that way? Let's see. Have you ever felt that way? Do I feel that way? Yeah. Well, God would not, He wouldn't have exposed His plan to mankind if we couldn't attain it. This isn't just a big psych job. He wants us genuinely to be there. He gave His own Son's life for that. That'd be tough. You know, people that have children can more identify with that. If you don't have children, can you imagine one of your family members saying, hey, for this chance, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to lay down my life. You know, that makes it more real. That was a big, big thing. You've got to respect that. Well, and also in Corinthians 9:26, I therefore so run not as uncertainly, so fight I not as one that beateth the air, but we've got a purpose. When we're fighting for a purpose. When we're running the race, we've got a goal set. We're running straight. You know, you can imagine a bunch of runners lined up, and one guy just takes off down the hill, everybody goes on. That's no purpose. That's no direction. But we've got purpose. We've got a purpose for a fight and a purpose for the direction. Well, God wants us to succeed. And you've seen that. And you've read that. Fear not, little flock. You'll hear that over and over. Reinforcement to this week's above. And we know that there is no devil. We're responsible for our actions. So the things that we choose, we are responsible for. We are the ones that sabotage ourselves in the kingdom. We can actually believe ourselves out of it. Does that ever occur to you? I'm never going to make it. You continually reinforce this to you. You'll behave that way and you'll believe yourself right out of it. How you see yourself determines how you function. You cannot act otherwise. It is important to remember that the quality of what we accept in our minds is the quality of what comes out. This week we're trying to fill our minds back up with quality of things. Because as we just described a little bit ago, what's quality in the world? Just give me one thing. What's quality in the world? Isn't that amazing? I mean, what is quality in the world? It's got to be something. Is there one thing? Something?
Boards.
Boys. Is there anything? Come on. There's something quality in the world, isn't there?
Music.
To a degree. I mean, something that can drive us, like a principle we follow, quality. Just one. Okay, they can be. But if it's a worldly friend, what realistically is it? True. Well, think about that. You know, I haven't really thought about that a whole lot. Well, the humanistic preposition, we're going to talk about what the world thinks about the world. Man is autonomous, pretty much independent, and he's inherently good. Shock. The solution to man's problems lies in man himself. Therefore, man does not need God. We don't want God to make us feel guilty. We don't want God to put rules on us that I can't, that I'm not going to enjoy. We don't need God. And this has been their fight from day one. Morals, which are situational ethics. You make ethics as the situation arises. We've And this is the humanistic manifesto. This is kind of the world creed, what we think about, or what they think about themselves, the world, humans, what we really are. We affirm that moral values derive their source from the human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. 1973. Well, today we call political ethics, or we call situational ethics, politically correct. Do you notice that a good politician can't stand really for anything? He rides the fence, you know. If Clinton or somebody were to say, no abortion, and millions of people saying, you're out of there. I'm a woman, I can decide what I want to do. You know, if Clinton, then he's in trouble now. No homosexuality. If he didn't say that. But if he were to support that side, you know, all the millions and millions he got for the campaign from all homosexuals and gay and lesbian, it'd be big turmoil. He's riding the fence. Politically correct means nothing absolute. You can ride the fence on anything. That's what the world's doing today. Nothing absolute. Don't condemn homosexuality because it's a gene I was born with. That's right. Not my fault. I was born to like men. Isn't that what they do? Yeah, they're calling it a gene. Well, if homosexuality was actually a disease, that'd be sad because there's no hope of forgiveness, is there? If the Bible said that homosexuality is an abomination and it was a disease that you couldn't help, you'd be in tough luck, wouldn't you? You would be literally cursed. There's no forgiveness for it. So the fact that homosexuality is a sin and you choose to do it also allows you, if you choose to stop to do it, to be forgiven. Now, that's a hard concept. You know, we have such a negative thing, but if someone truly said, this is wrong and I can't do it anymore, it's totally wrong, and sincerely seek forgiveness, if you stop doing that, that would be forgiven. Because it is a sin that you choose to do. That's where the Bible is the barometer on everything. You can clarify all the rationalization of man with the Bible. It's true. The Bible is unchanging, it's uncompromising, it's the standard of how we should conduct our behavior. It's clear. Well, a little thing that makes our behavior that we kind of follow routines, habits and attitudes. You got attitudes, they're not good or bad, they're either positive or negative towards something. You've got habits, you do. Our present behavior is governed by habits and attitudes. Habits are wonderful things, but sometimes they can be stumbling blocks. Old habits for bad habits, old routines. You know, this is what we call people stubborn, unwilling to change. Because they're so afraid of it. They're still afraid of that little stress period to get to the new level of performance. So they resort back into their little comfort zones, and they stay there. Let me hold in. Stubborn, you know. Older people sometimes get that way. Because change is scary. It takes a little stress to break out of the mold. Well, habits, we'll talk a little bit about habits. Habits become unconscious. You know, you can tie your shoes and talk to somebody. Well, I can. You know, you can start doing a lot of things at once with habits. You know, you can comb your hair and be talking to somebody. Or you can walk and talk for some. You know, so you'll have to stop and then say something. But anyways, habits allow us to do several things simultaneously. Okay? Much of what we do in life is habit tying. Tying shoes, putting on makeup, combing hair, driving your car. Have you ever been driving down the highway thinking about something and all of a sudden you realize, where did the last 10 miles go? It's kind of scary, but your subconscious took over because it's such a habit. You've driven that road to work every day. You know, it's kind of weird. I've done that before. You've just been thinking about something. Yeah, this terrible day at work and all this, I'm going home. Boom, I'm pulling the driveway. Whoa. Who was driving? But your subconscious has become such a habit. And that shows you how much a habit can really motivate you when you're not thinking about changing it. It just kind of takes over. It's imprinted in the subconscious. So, habits are good as long as things stay the same. We don't have any stress or anything to change them. Habits are good. We're very comfortable. We have a comfort zone. It's when change enters our lives, and the truth is about change all the time, that this stress occurs, this realigning, trouble, frustration. So in order to grow and change, we must change old habits and attitudes to reach new goals and outgrow intimidating situations. Does that make sense at all? Got to overcome present habits to form new habits at a higher level. For people of habit routines, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to change or learn if everything was just perfect? That'd be coasting. That'd be great. It'd be easy, but there's no growth. You're just coasting. You're just moving along. But this ever-changing world, it's not going to allow us to change or sit back. If you sit back, what happens like in Revelation? Either be good or bad, but don't be
lukewarm.
That's coasting. That's just hanging along for the ride. And what happens to lukewarm? Your history. You might as well enjoy the bad for now because you are neither good. Both are bad. We must be active people, people of purpose, people of vision, focused on our goals, the kingdom. We must change, constantly growing, and become resilient to the world. We've got to fight against it, against our changing morals and ethics. And the parable of the talents. Yeah, that's really simple. What's the one guy that just hit his talent in the sand? What happened? He didn't do anything with it. That's like coasting, lukewarm. What did he do? Just buried it in what?
Give it away to the other guy.
That's right. Because he didn't produce anything. And like Jim talked about in the third hour, what's the one thing we're going to look at judgment? Looking at us? What have we done? Come on, guys. Works. Fruit. There you go. We've got to produce something. We've got to be doing something. We know it's a gift of God by grace, but you got to do something in the meantime. Prove your faith by your works. That's what we're trying to do here. Crying? Yeah, I'm just about crying. Come on, guys. All right. Try to lighten it up a little bit. Old habits, old attitudes, comfort zones. What is it? It's a mold. Sanity. What's sanity? When you do something, your mind says, yep, that's who I am. That's sanity. That's the way things are. How do you get insane a little bit? Well, that's not like me. I'm doing something different. That's what I mean by getting insane. Break out of your present molds. Break out of your present habits. Go to a higher performance level. Feel the stress for a little bit. Focus on the goal. Create the how to get there. You will rise to it. But your goal has to be up here. Kingdom is the perfect goal. And you ask, I just asked, what's quality in the world? What's a moral thing in the world? Nothing. I didn't hear any answers. Unless someone's got some they're hiding. I mean, what are some qualities in here? Well, I'll answer it for you. You don't have to be stressed out. There's a lot of them. To raise our performance level. Get insane. Now let's turn the attitudes a little bit. These two die hard. We must replace or modify old attitudes if we're going to realize the full potential of the truth. Change old attitudes about yourself. Change old attitudes about your limitations. About your possibility. Well, briefly, an attitude is just the way we're leaning. If you like rock music, you lean positively towards it. If you think it's terrible, you lean this way. It's not really good or bad, it's just whether you lean towards it positively or lean towards it negatively. If you like the Democrats, well, you know, you kind of lean this way towards Democrats. If you're Republican, you lean this way. Not positive or negative, or not good or bad, just positive or negative. But certain things that you lean towards can be negative. Okay, with a positive attitude, you unconsciously do creative things to accomplish that objective. Let's give a good example. I really like rock music. What am I positively going to do when the rock group comes to town? I'm going to find a way to go to the concert, right? I like it. I like the atmosphere. I like to be in it. I'll just give an example.
Right? Yeah.
No, I am. But let's say you hate it. Then every time, or let's say, the Pope's coming to town in Denver. It's just going to be a joke, you know. Yeah. The World Youth Council, everybody from all the world's coming in. They're selling Pope dolls, Pope T-shirts, Pope records. You know, Alvin and the Chipmunks sing the Pope. You know, they got everything. Was it 200,000 items are going to be selling merchandising on the Pope? And you know, it's just going to be a joke. So that's why we're glad you're getting married because we're going out of town. So I lean, you know. For what the Pope stands for and all that, I lean negatively. I don't want to go down and hang out at 100,000 people masses and listen to him saying Dominus, Arminus, Cominus. You know, that's not for me. I lean negatively away. I'm going to find a way to stay away from it. Right? It's true. If you've got a positive attitude, something, you kind of create things to move towards it. If you've got a negative attitude against something, you're going to move away from it or stay away from it. It's natural. We do that. If you have a positive attitude towards the kingdom, you're going to lean towards it. You're going to look for opportunities to fulfill that objective. And that's what we're trying to do here today. Well, with a negative attitude, you'll lean away from it. With a positive attitude, you'll lean towards it. Unfortunately, we're not born with habits and attitudes. We learn them. That means we can learn to choose and learn to believe. That means we can unlearn them and learn different ones. When fashions change in society with clothes, it's very non-threatening. New shoes, you look at your shoes, my shoes are old. I gotta get new shoes. They can change that quick, your attitude. Fashion's quick. You see something new, everybody's got it. You look at your old jeans, look at your Jordache jeans. And you go, these are sorry. I look like a loser when I go to school and everybody knows it. Everybody's got faded, ripped up 501s. That's what I got. And it changes like that. But if your parents put a curfew on you at 10 o'clock, Friday and Saturday, man, that's forced change. That's not easy to change. You can't change that habit when you've been strolling in at 1:30. Can you? I mean, that's not as easy. See how easy it can be if you want something? Boom, these are old, I want the new. But if it's something you don't want, it's forced change. Many times it's temporary. Sometimes, if we look at the Bible as forced change, like if you were drug here in a trailer screaming to go to Bible school, that's forced change. And probably when you leave, it's not going to last very long. But if you came here of your own accord saying, I need this, you know, I need to do some things, fill my head up with some good things, it's more lasting change. You've got more positive towards it. Okay, part of what makes this non-threatening or easy to change an attitude is that majority of society is a peer support. It's easy when everybody likes it or wants to change it. When you say you go to church on Sunday and you go to Bible class and you're not supposed to do these things, what do most of your peers do, you know, in general? Why not? Drink, it's fun, man. Getting crazy, that's fun. Because I'm not supposed to. It's harder. You know, but if the whole world were great, you know, like we hope to, well, it will be eventually in the kingdom, then everybody's going to be positive and be doing righteous things. But right now, like we said, we can't find the quality or the morals anywhere. So it's harder to be the solitary person that says, I'm going to choose to do differently. Mm-hmm. But we can do it if our vision is set on the goal. We can put on the blinders and go and obtain higher performance levels. Who cares about that goal? Okay, what happens to our attitude of changeability? I just gave this example. When your parents say that you got to be in by 10:30, and I've heard this said to me, you need to get your priorities straight. Where's your head? You know? Kingdom's coming, and you're out. Where's your head? What are you thinking? What are you thinking? I hate that. I hate that. Because it puts the guilt right on you. Don't you? You know you're guilty, and you go, oh, Dad, I was going to have a good time, and now I'm going out with the big guilt. It's ruined my whole evening. We've all had it. Now, that's hard change, you know? Hard change to say, who says it? There's nothing worth doing after 10:30. And he said, by the way, he said that. Really? There's nothing worth doing good? Somebody said that. And I was going, yeah, you're right. Anyway, change is so much harder. You know, if you force change on someone, if you force them to do it, if you use scare tactics, it's temporary. I remember a guy that came to our school. His name's Toma. Did he ever come to your school? Did he?
No.
Toma. You know, this guy was just Mr. Cop, Mr. Been Through It All, and he was talking to you about drugs. He was scaring you about drugs. I mean, he'd be up there, pump the needle, you want this? You're going to die! You're going down! You know, he's scaring all of us in high school, just going, you got a drinking problem? You know, you get all these classes going together after school, and kids would be so shook up that they'd bring in their parents, Mom, I had a beer last week and I had a drinking problem. Freaked out. You know, but a couple months after that, everybody's going, that guy was an idiot. Scare tactics don't work. It's got to be genuine. You know, it's got to be positive. You know, I can't scare you into change. You know, this doesn't really work with us. People don't like to be scared. If you can show them something positive and people can go, yeah, that's right, then it's going to be lasting. You know, if you've got the goal as your kingdom and your parents saying, listen, you really need to get your head in a different direction, and you go, yeah, well, I know I want to be baptized eventually, you can realign easier. And that's the question I asked the first day yesterday. You got to want to be in the kingdom. If that's not somewhere in here, this is all forced change. You know, it's temporary. You're going to get home and call up all your buddies and say, let's go out. Now I had a week of religion. I'm ready to get cut loose. It's temporary. It's not your goal. You're not going to rise to it. All these principles we're talking about, you act like you believe yourself to be, it's not going to last. You know, it's just like a roller coaster ride. Oh, that was great. So it's like Ernie Blast's definition of fun ends with the experience. Happiness is working through things that you overcome, and you look back and go, yeah, I got a happy marriage. Been through some ups and downs, but I got a happy marriage. You know, this is what I found out with my friends. They go to party after party. You know, how many parties really look the same after you've been to them? You got the same idiots doing the same things, and they think it's going to be different that weekend. They think something new is going to happen. Oh, that's going to be great. Well, what'd you do differently? I don't know. And the thing is, you know, I've done some traveling in my business, and some of you old people can know this. You go to a social gathering with older people, and they still act like kids. I've seen 50-year-old men trying to scam on 25-year-old girls. You know, all wasted. It just doesn't change. I mean, people act the same. I've seen adults just act like they're 15. It doesn't change. I mean, it's just a lot of fun, but it ain't happiness. It's not lasting. It's temporary. You know what I'm talking about. This brings us back to our prerequisite. You've got to want to be in the kingdom. This is a higher goal. We're made for a higher purpose. And Anne brought up a couple verses to me. Let's all look up Matthew 20:16. So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. How many of you feel like you've been chosen to have an opportunity to be exposed to the truth? That's you guys, that's us. We're a few that have been chosen out of this whole terrible, corrupt world to have an opportunity. Now that's all positive. That means you are all exposed for a reason, because you've got potential. You've got potential to go to higher performance levels. You have potential to be in the kingdom. You've got to believe it when God says He wants you there. We're a few. I mean, that's why the title, you're special people. We are. Let's go one more verse. Okay, at first this may appear to be negative, but let's analyze it. 1 Peter 4:18. And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the ungodly and the sinner appear? Now that pretty much sets it straight. If the righteous scarcely be saved, if the few that are chosen be scarcely saved, now that puts things in perspective. The Bible is perfect for getting your perspective back on the world, on life. It's a barometer always to see what's right and what's wrong. Use it. You can find the right behavior for every situation. Okay, now we're going to start. I'll just give you some of this little section up. Attitudes and habits can be changed easily and painlessly with a visualized or desired goal. If we desire it like we like the new shoes, we'll get tired of this old person, we'll make the changes necessary to obtain it. It'll be positive, it'll be growth, it'll raise to new performance levels. If it's forced change, we don't really want to be here. You know, this is just going to be temporary. You're going to go back in the world. Temporary. And I realize for a time, teenagers, we just do that. We know back in here somewhere we want to be a part of this, but, you know, let me get through this year of school first. You know, that's not correct, but sometimes that's reality. But if you know what's correct, why not strive for being correct? You know, don't rationalize or water down God's word. Make it stand either correct, you know, or choose not to follow it. Because doing something halfway is like the lukewarm we talked about. It just goes to fall. Okay, if we want the kingdom as badly as we want to look cool in new shoes, how much easier will it be to change our attitudes and habits, and finally our behavior? You're going to be able to do good things. I mean, I'm not saying you're not doing them now, but you can do them more. You can see the opportunities to do it. They'll rise up. Like when you buy the new shoes and you see everybody's got them, you'll see. Here's my goal in the kingdom. Now I see all these opportunities to do something right. I can help this person. I can study here. I can grow here. In terms of choosing things, what's the only thing we can't choose to do in this world? Do you have to go to school? Do you have to work?
No.
Okay. Do you have to eat?
Yeah.
No?
No.
Breathe.
Do you have to breathe?
No.
I can choke myself and stop breathing, right? But I face the consequences and I die. There's only one thing really you can't choose, and that's to be born in life. You can choose to die. You can choose to not eat. You can choose to not work. You can choose to be the president. You've got to take the necessary steps to do it. You've got to be in law school. You've got to be a political little road rat and all that stuff. You got to really get involved with it, but that's not impossible. Nothing really impossible you can't choose to do is who you're born from. You can choose to die. You can choose not to work. You just may not get paid. That may get support your family. You may starve. You may not get food. Those are consequences, but you still chose to do it. See, that gives us a lot of power. There's a lot of power in choice. There's a lot of things you can choose to do. Certainly that means you can choose a lot of things to do with yourself. Well, the biggest setback, I think, that I've had, and this is the news section, guilt. Guilty. Feeling guilty. Can you throw that up real quick? Ta-da! There you go. So let's... Did you catch all that?
That was cool.
He's cool.
Well, we just have a couple minutes left. What time is it? What time is it? Okay, let me find a question. Alright, we'll set up guilt for tomorrow. This will be perfect rule to set up. Okay, guilt started really by, guilt is directly tied in with being responsible. If you're responsible for doing something and it's wrong, you're going to feel guilty. Simple as that. Here's the thing that it all started out, and this is classic. It started all back in the Garden of Eden. I'll just read this little section. The depressing shame of a guilty conscience was experienced by Adam. He had the capacity for self-examination that God built in the man, and it now activated painful sensations. Guilty. When you read about David, his bones ache. That man felt guilt. Guilt is stressful. It makes real physical things we feel. Man had come to know good and evil by personal experience, and the red light on the dashboard was flashing. Man's conscience accused him of sin. Painful, visceral responses followed, and Adam ran. But instead of running to God, he ran away and he hid from him. When God finally cornered Adam from among the trees, Adam emerged covered with fig leaves. He had further complicated matters by attempting to handle the difficulty on his own rather than turning to God for the proper solution. Adam had committed a crime, he'd attempted a getaway, and now he was trying to cover up. True. But God pointed the finger of accusation squarely at him, Adam. In spite of Adam's attempts to avoid the problem of sin, God pressed the issue. God confronted him, forcing him to deal with the problem. Take responsibility. Even under that pressure, Adam lied and shifted the blame. He said, in effect, "The woman which you gave me, Lord, she's the one that made me to eat. Not my fault. You created this woman here, and she tempted me." So then God turns to the woman. The woman goes, "Not me, the serpent." So you can see where the shifting of responsibility, not wanting to deal with guilt, which is acknowledging responsibility, started from day one. So neither Adam nor Eve was willing to bear personal responsibility for his rebellion. Instead, each attempted to justify himself by shifting blame to another. Now, this is the world, the classic. You're not responsible for my actions. It's not my fault I'm a homosexual. It's not my fault. This has come out through the world in so many instances. People don't want to feel guilt. Remember a guy, a little German guy called Freud? Mm-hmm. Has anybody studied him much? Psychology at all? What was his famous thing? If you feel guilty, it's false guilt. We got to find something in your past to blame it on. Mm-hmm. You know, basically. If you were pushed down your stairs by a little brother, well, that's why you kill people. It's not your fault. You know, things like that. Well, the world has clung on to this. And even, and you hear this all the time. Well, this guy went to McDonald's and he killed 8 people. But he was a product of society. It's not his fault. You know, it's a product of his environment. Did he choose to go in there? Sure he did. Did he choose to load the AK-47? Sure he did. You know, did he choose to go to McDonald's? You bet. He could have gone to Burger King. But he chose it. And when they killed Kennedy, they said, society, you know. And just last a couple weeks ago, 400 Catholic priests got accused of molestation, you know. And the head priest says, it's just society today, you know. Can you believe that? I mean, they do that all the time. People are afraid of acknowledging responsibility. And it started from day one. You know, if we were to follow Freudian theory, like we talked about the other day, God is to blame for all man's sins. Because he created woman, which made us sin. He also created the serpent, which made us sin. It's not our fault. If you follow that thinking, which is worldly thinking, see where all this goes. Anyways, let's stop there. We're right on the money. We'll continue. That's set the stage for tomorrow.